Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf.
The Tuesdays and a half hour that is always special on this show, we bring in Neil Coulong. Sir, welcome.
It's great to be here. Thank you, gentlemen, for having me.
So the Steelers, a mystifying team, went through at least a bye, so we're not so mystified. But we saw a weekend of football where we saw low scoring and teams expected to win that didn't. What were your thoughts watching it?
I felt overall on the week that it was kind of fresh into the mean. The one game that did intrigue me the most was San Francisco and Cleveland. And I think, yes, a lot of people expected San Francisco to just roll over Cleveland. But really what we see in the Browns is what I thought was going to end up happening when Jim Schwartz came in there. That's a high-level defensive team. They're really good. Miles Garrett, obviously, is a fantastic player. But you watch them, their entire unit, they play a lot of guys. They go really deep into packages. There's a lot of things they can do, and they're really good at all of it. An amazing job by Schwartz with just one training camp and 6 weeks into the season to largely paralyze an offense that's, you know, just as versatile as Cleveland's defense is. And I think the message overall for the league is, you know, that this is not going to be a runaway for anybody. You know, I think we kind of thought that going into it, or at the very least, we don't know. In the first half of the season, it still kind of seems to be trial and error for most teams. It's not suggesting they don't play hard or anything, but they don't get to that Super Bowl form for a while. You know, you're really not seeing teams really running deep into seasons undefeated anymore. And Cleveland, for them to have done that with P.J. Walker playing pretty miserably. I mean, he did not have a very good game at all.
No.
It's a testament to how good of a defensive team they are. And San Francisco's no joke in three phases either. And Cleveland did enough to be able to take them out. They're a very impressive win.
Yeah, that's the interesting part. It's not just P.J. Walker, but Zach Wilson led the Jets in some way or shape or form over the Philadelphia Eagles. I want to ask you about Hurts for a moment. I felt Hurts last year, Neil, 90% of the time, I say, played great. I mean, every game, 90% of the time, which I think is phenomenal to say that about any player. This year, I don't even think he's close to that. I've got him in the very good category to this point. Why do you think are you saying the same thing? And if so, why?
I think with Hurts, from what I'm seeing of him, it's not the end result, the aggregate result is what we're seeing. It's not surprising when you watch his games play to play. To me, the difference between last year and this year, it really is only a couple plays, it feels like. You know, and they're not getting Devontae Smith going downfield as well as they did. A.J. Brown being who he is, he's going to make the plays that he makes. But they had two guys doing that last year, and they got a lot more out of their tight end play as well. And I think Philadelphia is not too far off, but you're seeing a team that required a high level of precision to do the things that they do well. It took a lot of coordination to be able to do that. To throw a new coaching staff in there, you can see perhaps why the struggles are happening the way that they are, but Jalen Hurts was not a wide open end-to-end kind of player, you know, to mix my sports metaphors. It's more, not to say that he is not good, but they had phenomenal offensive coaching on that team last year. I think that is kind of the piece that's missing, not series to series, but just a few plays throughout the game are really the difference, in my opinion anyway. They were able to get him on the edge with room to operate. He had the ability to run a little bit more or hit something deep, and he did a great job deciding which one of those to do. He didn't make mistakes with the ball the way he did against the Jets. Now, the Jets aren't a sleeper defense either. Let's give them some credit. But they beat him up pretty good. He fought hard. He put up a good effort, which suggests to me he is very close to being the type of player that he is. But just, you know, maybe that's really it. The difference between, you know, the high-end guys and the mid guys are just a couple plays. I think we're seeing that on, you know, as a trend throughout the NFL right now. And Hurts is perhaps the best example of that. He's a better player, but I think they were able to put him in better positions last season. And through six games, let's, you know, keep in mind they're not failing. I mean, they're a 5-1 team.
Right.
But he has looked better. The offense has played better. And that, you know, is something they're going to need to get going in a hurry if they want to be back where they were.
It was also a weekend where, for the most part, scoring was down. Now, we all know defensive coordinators aren't out there playing golf in the offseason every single day, getting the handicap down to 5. They're looking at tape of everybody so they can be ready for whatever they think the trend is at the moment. Why do you think that we're seeing scores down, especially with some of the talent we see on offense?
If we put it at the 10,000-foot level, teams are really just playing a lot more cover two. There are situations in which they'll go, you know, cover zero. They'll be a lot more aggressive, but you're not seeing kind of an all or nothing type of defense that ended up surrendering a lot of big plays. When you play back off of Patrick Mahomes, when he doesn't have the ability to escape horizontally, buy himself some time and make some ridiculous, you know, zero window throw 80 yards down the field, your scoring is going to come down to what's probably a little bit more reasonable. You know, to say it's down compared to where it was, which was at historical highs. I think that it's regressing back to the mean because teams are really intent on not allowing the big plays deep down the field. You're seeing safeties getting drafted higher than they were, perhaps not top five, but a good amount of them are going in the first round. And teams are committed to having two legit safeties playing deeper. Now, they'll move them around. You want to cover your slot, but it's that as well. You're getting more versatile linebackers that can help out with the slot. You're keeping more cornerbacks. There are more game-ready cornerbacks coming into the NFL. The money there is going up a little bit. I think with that in mind, they're able to keep two safeties back a lot more often to really try to take away those big plays. And it's teams in turn are throwing shorter, possessing the ball more, and playing more ball control, waiting for their opportunities to open up in order to score. Through 6 weeks, I mean, that's a lot that you'd have to flesh out, but it just feels like that watching it, because at the same time, you've seen a lot of sacks too. You know, defense, I think, is catching up compared to where it was. But schematically, there's a big emphasis on rolling coverage over the top and not allowing stuff outside the numbers.
Yep, Miami's the one that bucks this trend with what they've done to this point. What makes Mike McDaniel's offense, with Tua running it, and he made sure that when I talked to him in the spring, he emphasized that part. What makes that a difference?
I hate to be cliche and obvious, but speed. Those guys can move. They're fast. Everybody's fast in the NFL. You know, that can't be the difference between a team averaging 31 a game and one averaging 16. You know, there's got to be more to it than that. Mike McDaniel, he's a genius. The way that he sets up all of his players on the field, he's really committed to using everybody actively on every play. And I think that in turn, that in concert with the fact that you have some great run-after-catch receivers, that sets them up for big plays. And on top of that, they're a very effective running team. They've got great balance overall. And we've seen them put it together to you know, significant results through this point in the season. A team that I don't know if there's a defense in the NFL that's really going to stop them, short of, you know, getting a second half stand maybe at some point. But you got to almost think they're kind of the favorites just with what they can do offensively. There are, as you mentioned, that they're the ones that are bucking the trend, and a lot of it is, in my opinion, just this total offensive philosophy. They use everybody. They have great athleticism. There are great players on that team and a quarterback that knows where to go with the ball. To me, he looks a lot more confident. He's not missing stuff nearly as often as he had earlier in his career. And he's, you know, really just kind of keeping it simple. There's a great player here who's going to be here. I'm going to get him the ball there, and he's going to go a long way. They've eaten off that several times this year. I think we'll see that continue.
All right, yeah, and that's the interesting part. And I think they will continue with it because I think they've got something that is difficult to stop right now. We just went through another Chargers game where they lost. And, of course, the topic of analytics comes up. Do we have to do a better job of staying away from the simple answer of analytics and understanding that a coach knows his personnel and he knows what the weaknesses are of his personnel, thus that he is more inclined maybe to go for it on fourth down because he knows he has weaknesses? And I'm thinking about Washington, Oregon, for example. You know, Dan Lanning got criticized, especially at the end of the game. I think he knew against Penix he had some holes back there, and this was his best shot to win. And he got criticized for it because he didn't make it.
Yeah, I mean, it's easy to criticize when it fails. And people oftentimes want to take the ultimate fourth down decision as a very binary black and white thing. And yes, the decision go or not go is there, but from there, you have any idea how much time, preparation, planning goes into what you're going to call on fourth down? Give me numbers all you want, and the data scientists are going to tell you that these numbers represent frequency over the course of every team over the course of the season. They do not represent anything specific in that moment. You have to take into account among many things weather, injuries, your specific matchups, but perhaps most importantly, tendency. What have you run before? I remember talking with you back in the day when Mike Tomlin went 0-for-5 against the Cowboys on 2-point conversions.
Right.
You know what they were prior to that? Something like 75-80%.
Right.
Up to that point, the trend is they're going to hit 4 out of 5. Okay, well, they missed on all of them because that doesn't matter. It's about who you have matched up. It's about who you're going against and what can you do with what you have against them. I've said this a lot. My decision, this is just me, to go for 2 points on a play is going to be far less frequent if Kenny Pickett is my quarterback, whereas if Lamar Jackson is my quarterback, I'm going to go for 2 a lot more often. That has nothing to do with anything else except for the fact that I've got a great dual threat weapon in a short space. I'm going to build up around that player. When we get into analytics, and everybody's going to get into this, and perhaps, you know, Brandon Staley becomes the scapegoat of the whole thing, it's not just simple, you know, we're going to get this 60% of the time over the course of the season, because over the course of the season does not matter. It's not baseball. You don't play it like that. When you have 17 games, you have to play the situation. We know that because what do they do in baseball? When they face a specific situation, they're not going with what would work for them with a plan over 162 games. They got to play in a 7-game series, so they're playing it based on the situation. My point in that is, when you lock into just the statistics of it, you're really defeating the purpose of what the analytics are there to tell you anyway. It's to give you a sense of what is going to happen so you can plan out everything else around it. Just because this number is where it is not the reason to go for it. It suggests if we do this now and we miss, we have to go for it next time. Do we have a good chance of making both of these? The numbers say this. You know, it's a decision-making tool. It's not the ultimate factor, and it's not designed to be that. People just want the simple answer of something, and it doesn't really work that way.
Steelers go to SoFi, play the Rams. Coming up on Sunday, your thoughts on the matchup?
I was telling people earlier, I'm tired of predicting Steelers games.
I know. It's impossible.
Everything I pick is wrong. I thought Broderick Jones was going to be terrible against Baltimore. Literally the opposite of that. What I see on paper film up to this point, the Rams have a very complicated scheme for the Steelers, the way that they play defense. I like the Rams throwing the ball in this game. They run crossers, slants, those types of things that tend to be effective against the Steelers' defense, but not playing as much man as they did, probably due to the fact that they don't have, well, they have one good man cover corner who doesn't play all that much for some reason. The other ones are not going to be able to keep up with the Rams' receivers, Cooper Kupp in particular, from the slot. If they play him in man, they're in trouble. So I would imagine they're going to run a lot of combos, high-low types of stuff that McVay loves to do. McVay loves this kind of a matchup. I would expect them to have a pretty solid offensive game. Can the Steelers keep up with, well, anybody in the league offensively? Not the way that I see it, but we've seen them do some crazy things coming off of a bye as well. So, you know, maybe this is kind of a get-right game for them. It's not a strong talent-wise Rams team. But after saying all of that, I look at Aaron Donald versus Mason Cole, and I think that it's going to be a long game for the Steelers offense. So for me, I think it's tough to go cross-country to win against just about anybody. And I think the Rams really have the matchup advantage in this. I don't think top to bottom they're a better team per se, but the Steelers just have weaknesses where the Rams have strengths. And it's a matchup game. Sometimes it just comes down to that.
My friend, always a pleasure making the show better like you always do.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me, guys.